Michigan legislators could vote this week on a controversial proposal that would expand the state's Education Achievement Authority. That's the state-run district comprised of 15 of the most challenged schools in the state, currently all in Detroit. EAA administrators, Governor Rick Snyder, and other supporters say the initiative, now in its second year, is beginning to turn around those schools. They say test scores are rising due to a student-centric teaching model, a longer school year, and grouping students by ability instead of age. But opponents of the measure, two of whom appeared on yesterday's program, paint a starkly different picture. They say the EAA is off to a bad start, that it's not serving students, and has serious problems with transparency and demonstrating progress. Well, Current State welcomes two guests who are at the heart of the issue. Both support expansion. First, we welcome the Chancellor of Michigan's Education Achievement Authority, Dr. John Covington. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, and thank you.
Sure. It's our pleasure to have you. And we welcome back to the program the Chair of the House Education Committee, Republican Representative Lisa Postumus-Lyons.
Good morning, Mark.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. Thanks for having me today.
Lisa, let's start with you. Why do you support the expansion of the EAA from 15 schools up to as many as 60?
Sure. The question is, we have, you know, what are we going to do with kids who are trapped in persistently failing schools? The traditional public schools that are currently failing right now have demonstrated that they are leaving kids behind, and I just believe it is too important to these kids and their prospective education to not do something different. And the EAA has proven that they have the ability to turn student achievement around, and I think that is exactly what we need to do for all of our kids stuck in failing schools.
Chancellor Covington, what would you add to that? Why do you feel the district ought to be expanded?
Well, the entire purpose of the Education Achievement Authority of Michigan is to address the persistently lowest achieving schools across the state of Michigan. As you've already indicated to your listening audience, we started with the first 15 schools in the city of Detroit. And while we certainly have critics out there who say that we're not successful, one only has to look at the data to see that our students and our teachers, they've done a remarkable job in a very, very short period of time. We ended the last school year with approximately 68% of our students in achieving 1.5 to 2 years growth in a year, and 64% of those children achieving 1.5 to 2 years growth in the area of mathematics. Our whole intent is to make sure that children are making measurably, statistically significant increases in their academic performance from where they started at the beginning of the year to where they end up at the end of the year. And if we don't do something to ensure that we are positively impacting the education of the lives of our children, it's certainly going to have a serious, or continue to have a serious economic drain on the state's economy, and it's going to do little to help children acquire the skill sets that they need to transform their lives and then be able to contribute back to their communities in which they live.
Now, as you're both aware, and as you've alluded to, there is significant doubt about the progress that you claim EAA schools are enjoying. For one, critics allege a serious lack of transparency. Lisa Lyons, here is how your Democratic colleague on the House Education Committee, Brandon Dillon, put it yesterday here on Current State.
It has been like pulling teeth, to say the least, to get any information out of the EAA. The information we do get is usually from teachers, students, and parents who are unwilling to, in most cases, put their name out there for fear of retribution.
A pretty scathing assessment. What do you make of that?
That's a good question. I appreciate the opportunity to respond to that. You know, for any time you go into a school, you will find teachers or parents or students that aren't satisfied with what is going on. That's just the nature of how humans operate. And for every person you find that has concerns with the EAA, you'll have students and teachers and parents who totally believe in this transformation they're seeing in their kids. We had several of them up just last week to talk to lawmakers as to how the EAA has changed their lives, how these kids are now finally starting to learn. So I take that with a grain of salt to begin with. As far as the transparency, I can assure you, and I've made it, you know, a priority, at least for the House and for our purposes in creating the law. The EAA is, as a public school, will be subject to every single Open Meetings Act and FOIA provisions that any other public school would be. So whatever they're referring to is obviously something beyond FOIA and open meetings.
Chancellor Covington, let's talk about this FOIA situation here. If Representative Ellen Kogan Lipton is to be believed, the EAA clearly resisted requests for important data. When you finally agreed, she alleges a data dump. In other words, I mean, so much data that it took weeks and months to sort through all of it. Why has it been so hard, according to Representative Kogan Lipton, to get the information that's been asked for?
Well, first of all, the amount of information that Representative Lipton requested was really a large amount, and so when we finally were able to get the data together, we provided it to her, and that's what she received. The Education Achievement Authority has no problem with transparency. We'll provide anybody anytime that they request the information that they receive. Now, you indicate that there are those who are questioning the results that we claim our children and our teachers received last year. Well, one only has to look at, for example, if you're not taking our word, then we had an outside agency, Excellent Schools Detroit, who evaluated 124 schools across the city of Detroit, which included DPS, the Archdiocese, and charter schools, based on growth. And at the end of the year, when they issued their report card to the general public, all of our six direct-run schools ranked in the top 20 of 124 schools evaluated based on growth, three scored in the top six, and one ranked in the top three. And so that's not our evaluation. That's an outside agency, Excellent Schools Detroit, looking at the data and evaluating our progress, and not just our progress, but the progress of all schools in the city of Detroit, including the Archdiocese, charter schools, and Detroit Public Schools.
Chancellor Covington, I'd like to ask you about the EAA's per-student spending here. The authority gets state money. It gets some federal dollars, at least $10 million from the Broad Foundation, plus contributions from other foundations. How much does the EAA spend on each of its students? What's its per-pupil cost all in?
I would say that our per pupil expenditure for students is probably about $6,100 minus the debt service. Well, no, about $7,100, including the debt service that we pay to Detroit Public Schools for occupying their schools. When you look at removing that portion of our per pupil allocation that we get for paying debt service to Detroit, we're probably expending about $6,200 per kid, and that's after startup revenue that we receive from philanthropic groups within the state of Michigan and also including the Broad Foundation.
So this, in your view, are you concerned at all about the sustainability of paying for the EAA?
No, not at all. Once we launch or onboard a school, Mark, we live within the per pupil allocation that we get from the state, as well as the federal contribution that we get from the government. And so, in essence, we're spending after a school is onboarded and we get the school started. The amount of revenue that we receive is a little less than what a normal school district would receive, because we don't receive local taxes. We only receive the federal dollars and the state dollars.
Lisa, update us on where the measure is. It was in committee. Has it moved out of committee now?
4369 moved out of the House Education Committee back in March of 2013 and moved off the floor at that same month. So it was spent several months in 2013 over in the Senate where they deliberated, discussed, made changes to the bill, and voted it out in December, and now the bill is back before the House for concurrence, and we continue to discuss, based on changes that the Senate made, what the House wants to see as part of that EAA bill prior to taking a vote on it. So it's back in the House floor.
But it's on the floor or in your committee?
It's on the floor. It passed out of our committee last year in 2013.
Now, you've been blasted here for skipping hearings on this, and there is some degree of hesitation even from your fellow Republicans on this. Why not? Why did you skip the hearings? Why wasn't this more thoroughly discussed?
I guess my question would be, on what basis are people saying I've skipped hearings? I'm the chair of the Education Committee. It's my bill. I preside over the committee. I've never skipped an education hearing.
Critics point to a 24% drop in enrollment between the first year and this school year. If the district is off to as good a start as you claim, wouldn't that number have been a lot lower?
Well, not necessarily when you consider the structure of how we operate in the Education Achievement Authority. For example, our first day of school is September the 4th. And we are not out of school until August the 6th. So we're basically running a year-long calendar. And then when you look at the number of students that, what you're hearing is correct, we did drop in enrollment, but when you look at what grade level, traditional grade levels, those students are, they're basically high school students who indicated that they left because our calendar conflict with some of the things that they would like to accomplish during the summer months. For example, if they want to go to Michigan University to participate in Upward Bound, or they get a summer job, or participate in any other number of initiatives at colleges and universities during the summer months. And so what we've done is we will be launching a trimester calendar this summer, so that we can maintain those students and offer them the flexibility and the autonomy to still participate in those kinds of experiences while maintaining their status with the Education Achievement Authority.
I want to play for both of you the comments of one of our guests yesterday. Brooke Harris taught at Mumford High School in Detroit in the EAA's first year, last year. She described a video lesson about a book she claims is typically not taught in middle school that she was told to teach to her 10th graders. She refused. She did not. Here's why.
I thought it was condescending and offensive. I did show that lesson to a group of community members, one of whom was a parent of a student at Mumford, and she found me after that presentation and told me that she cried. When she saw what the EAA thought her student was intellectually capable of, it made her cry. She wept that is what I was supposed to be teaching in my class, but I refused to do.
This gets back to this the buzz system, which we talked about yesterday. What school districts around the country have used the buzz system before?
Buzz is, first of all, it should be understood that buzz is not the primary source of getting information, knowledge, and or teaching to children. Now, that is the teacher's role. Buzz is nothing more than a tool where a number of resources reside, including open source and proprietary resources that teachers can use to enhance children's education and to help them get to the growth that we're trying to achieve by the end of the school year. So the tool, Buzz, is nothing more than a tool. Right now, I think we're the only primary district in the country that's using the system. There's a number of other districts that are looking at moving to the system. So BUZZ is designed primarily to help teachers better facilitate, better teach in a blended, student-centered environment. It is not the most people understand would assume that, okay, teachers, students will go to the Education Achievement Authority and sit in front of computers all day. That is absolutely, positively not our system. So sometimes BUZZ is confused as being the curriculum, and it is not. We meet children where they are.
You did teach a novel without the novel, though. That was really the bottom line of some of the comments that were made.
Okay, when you say teach a novel without the novel, I have no idea what your guest on yesterday is talking about. When I say that BUZZ includes a number of open source and proprietary resources, it includes novels as well. And so basically, teachers are free, and they have the autonomy and flexibility to use those open resources in a number of ways to get to the children's or to help the children overcome the deficiency that they have in terms of where they are.
As you're seeing, a lot of the criticisms that have been displayed or communicated about the EAA itself and the legislation that we're working on, many of which are frankly just baseless, are really distracting from the issue. The issue is we have children. I have four kids, and two of them are in our public schools, and they are so fortunate to go to a quality school where the community has rallied around the learning and the teachers care, and the students are there. They're thriving. There's just a vitality there. These kids don't have that, and the status quo, what everybody else, the critics are defending, is not working, and it hasn't been working, and it is leaving the kids behind. That's why this is so important. The state has a constitutional obligation to provide an education to all of Michigan's kids, no matter where they live. And I, as chair of education committee, and most of all as a mother, I want to make sure that we are making every effort we can to educate our kids in a quality environment. And anything short of that, frankly, is abdicating our constitutional role, and it's immoral.
Candidly, Chancellor Covington and Representative Lyons, if a fraction of the comments coming from Representative Dillon, from Representative Lipton, are accurate, they would have us believe that it's miraculous that we're having a discussion about expansion at all. I would go so far as to say that the EAA, in its smaller role, in its current role, they would maintain is worthy of a vigorous review.
Yeah, we have found that there's no depths that defenders of the status quo won't go to stop innovation and change. I think as you look at the results, actual learning going on in the EAA for those kids, those results are impressive as they are inspiring, and you can't make those test results up.
And I would also add that any review that we or that they want to have us undergo, we are transparent. We don't have a problem with it. We believe, and we're going to stand by, that every child in the state of Michigan deserve the best possible education that we can give them, including those who are relegated at no fault of their own of attending persistently lowest achieving schools, not only in the city of Detroit, but some in other areas of the state. And these young people have been failed for years. When you look at the level of their academic progress when we acquired these schools compared to where they are now, Representative Lyons is absolutely correct. The growth that they have made is impressive. But when they were in these failing schools, they were getting failing grades, and in terms of growth, they were failing to make growth year after year after year after year. And not to have an alternative in place where these children can have a fair chance at life hinders on being outright criminal.
Well, I don't think that even your harshest critics would maintain that this isn't a very challenging landscape. I mean, I don't think Representative Lipton or Representative Dillon or Senator Hopgood have maintained anything other than that, just to be perfectly clear. Why not? You've taken more heat here, Lisa, for not waiting until the MEEP scores come out next month. We got a really important measurement of student academic progress coming up next month. Why not wait until those are in and bolster your case with those scores?
I'll let Dr. Covington talk about the MEEP scores, but where I sit, we've waited long enough to help these kids that are in failing schools. I'm not willing to wait any longer. These schools that are on the persistently lowest achieving list have demonstrated over and over and over again what they're doing is not working. I will not wait any longer. I know Dr. Covington may talk a little bit about this, but it's universally accepted that MEEP scores just don't adequately reflect student growth, whether it's from the students in the EAA or where my kids go to school.
Why do we use the MEEP at all?
Good question, Mark. We're not going to be using the MEEP anymore. We're in this transition phase of moving to a new state assessment that everybody understands the importance of measuring student growth. So I expect to see that this next year. With regards to the MEEP scores, though, the scores we get this year won't tell us much because I don't know what the scores will be, but they won't tell us much because it's not the same batch of kids who were the same students who were test on the MEEP last year. Those students are now in fourth grade. We're testing a whole new set of students who came from second grade who are now in third grade. So that won't measure what the students are actually achieving and learning as a result of the EAA education model.
John Covington, another criticism is that many of the students the district serves are special needs and that EAA schools are simply not staffed to address those needs. What do you make of that?
Well, I think and that criticism is somehow suggesting that the Education Achievement Authority cherry pick. We take any child who comes through our doors and provide them with the same opportunity that we would provide any other regular education child. And I think there's been a misunderstanding as to what it is we do in the Education Achievement Authority relative to special education children. For example, the national average of special education is maybe 14%, thereabouts. Don't hold me to that, but approximately 14%. When we acquired the first 15 schools, for example, in one of our schools, the special education population was 47-48%. Now, it's not rocket science to know that when you have special education figures that high, that someone has over-identified children for special education services when they shouldn't have been. And so as a result of that, my directive, and I'm going to stand, I stand by this directive, and I do not apologize for it. My directive was to look at every single IEP of every single special education child that we have, review that IEP, and then as a result of that review, determine whether or not that child should have been assigned to special education or assigned for special education services. And so in many cases, what we were looking for, we found that those children never should have been enrolled in special education. And as a result of that, we provided them with a transition plan to take them out. And so for those children who are truly special education and should be receiving special education services, we want them to be provided with the same opportunity as their regular education peers. But if students were over-identified for whatever the reasons are, we then do whatever we can to make sure that they are placed and taught and be provided with appropriate educational programs and services to meet their diverse and their unique needs, period.
One more funding question before we wrap this up. John Covington, there's a $30 million grant from the Federal Department of Education to allow for an expansion to these 60 schools. Among the 10 school districts included are Grand Rapids and Lansing. The grant says it will impact approximately 46,000 students and more than 2,200 teachers. That's a direct quote. Will the $30 million cover all of that cost?
And I can only assume that when you talk about a grant that we received from the United States Department of Education, that that is a TIF grant and that is for pay for performance. And so that grant, if we're talking about one and the same federal grant, and that's the only grant we receive in that magnitude, so it would have to be that one, is really for teacher salaries, is to pay teachers for increased positive student outcomes.
Okay. We want to thank both of our guests here for joining us today. A very hot topic at the state capitol, the expansion of Michigan's Education Achievement Authority. We want to thank the Republican chair of the House Education Committee, Lisa Postumus-Lyons, and Chancellor John Covington of the EAA. Many thanks to both of you.
Thank you, Mark.